As the 115th Congress convenes today, we will take a look at the major issues before it, including a vote that is scheduled for today for the House of Representatives that would gut the Office of Congressional Ethics. House Republicans voted in private last night to slash the power of this independent office and put it under the oversight of the Congress members that it is now charged to investigate. Do you think this is a good idea? We'll find out what those House Republicans are thinking from our guest, and we'll welcome your input. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January 3rd. We'll also talk with our guest about other issues before the new Congress, including repealing Obamacare, Russia policy, taxes, and more. And we'll welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Stephen Smith, a distinguished professor of social sciences, a professor of political sciences, and the director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. He's also the author of several books, including The Senate Syndrome, The Evolution of Parliamentary Warfare in the Modern U.S. Senate. Good morning.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Well, I'm going to get into this this vote on the ethics office in just a moment, but sort of set the stage for us. Congress convenes today, what happens today? Is this people take the oath of office? What happens?
Well, that's the main thing, of course, and the House adopts a set of rules to govern its activities over the next 2 years, the new Congress. And it's a part of that rules package that this issue of the Office of Congressional Ethics plays a role. In the Senate, new senators are sworn into office, but, of course, their rules are continuing from one Congress to another, so there's no big news that we expect from the Senate today. I think the real question in the Senate is how quickly they can act on the president's cabinet nominations, and that'll take some weeks.
Yeah. Well, and so how would you describe the opportunities, the challenges, the issues that lie ahead for Republicans who control the House, the Senate, and the presidency?
Well, the first challenge is setting priorities. What do they want to come out of the chute with? What do they want to be best known for in over the course of the next 2 years? What's their most important set of issues? And I don't think that's entirely settled. President-elect Trump, of course, is coming in with a set of campaign promises, many of which we haven't heard much about in recent weeks, acting on trade deals, doing something on immigration, and at least I haven't heard anything about the wall for quite a long time. But clearly, Obamacare and tax cuts, probably the two biggest issues, doing something about federal regulations, some of which can be done from the White House, but some of which will require congressional action. Those are probably the very biggest issues and will be given the highest priority. Now, it's not going to be easy to act on them very quickly. It'll take weeks and probably months to make significant changes in Obamacare. And tax bills take a long time to percolate. We haven't seen any meaningful, detailed congressional proposal on tax cuts yet. So all of that will take time. In the meantime, I'm sure they're lining up lesser issues for quick action. And over the course of the next couple of days, we'll be listening to the Republican leaders on Capitol Hill to find out what they are.
Yeah. So the GOP will have has complete control of Congress, even stronger majorities, and in addition to the presidency. So how does that conservative majority dictate what issues Congress takes up? And are the Democrats going to be completely helpless here?
Not completely helpless, but they're in a very weak position. Actually, the Republicans, of course, lost a few seats in the last election. They're down to 241, a loss of 6 or 7 seats in the House. And they lost a couple of seats in the Senate. And in the Senate especially, that probably could make a difference here and there. After all, if the Republicans lose three votes from their own side on some of these issues, then they will no longer have a majority on the floor. So the challenge for the Democrats, of course, is to fashion positions that appeal to at least a few Republicans and prevent that very narrow Republican majority in the Senate from exercising control over the body. In the House, Republicans still control about 55% of the seats. So as long as they're reasonably united, they can pretty much do what they want. I think what we're going to find two or three months from now is that the big issue is how the congressional leaders are going to deal with differences between the House and the Senate Republicans. I have a feeling that the House Republicans are going to continue to push pretty conservative views on most of these issues, but that the Senate Republicans will find that somewhat more moderate legislation is the only way to get things through the Senate and keep their party together. And that's going to set up a contest between the two chambers. And it's not clear to me that President Trump's going to be in a strong position to weigh in and settle the matter, as you'd normally expect when there's a president of the same party in the White House.
Yeah. Do you see Republicans in Congress, in the House or the Senate, you think might be breaking with party leadership or with the conservatives? Are we going to see any infighting amongst the Republicans?
Well, I think we are. I think the President Trump's tax proposals are probably much too conservative for at least a handful of Republicans. The fact that they were tilted so much to the wealthy, I think it will create some dissension among Republicans who represent states that, where they're going to expect, some pushback. So I think we'll see some dissension on Trump's tax policies. There's an awful lot of interest in repealing Dodd-Frank, the large piece of a federal law that and now regulates the financial industry. And I think we're going to see some Republicans thinking that some aspects of Dodd-Frank are really quite desirable, and so just repealing it, as many have advocated on the Republican side, will be seen as going way too far. So on one issue after another, healthcare, financial system regulation, taxes, and on other issues, I think the question is just how are the Republican leaders going to be able to rally their troops on behalf of some Trump proposal, if there is one? That raises the big issue is how much of a legislative leader Donald Trump will actually be. What we seem to be seeing over the last couple of weeks is that most of this effort to set priorities has been occurring on Capitol Hill without a lot of involvement from the Trump team. They've been consulted, but as far as I can tell, most of the action is being driven by members of Congress.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about this after the news, but tell us why House Republicans last night in private passed this bill that would gut the Office of Congressional Ethics, to actually take its power away and put it under a congressional committee made up of members that it would have that it would have investigated.
Well, because they didn't like an independent office run by essentially professionals, lawyers, conducting secret or private confidential investigations of charges against a member of Congress, and then being able to publish their findings without any control by members of the House. So they've made it impossible for that office to do that, and now under this new rule would allow the committee itself to block any additional investigation on the part of that office. So they didn't eliminate the office; they just radically reduced its independence. I'm of the view that this isn't a done deal. There were 74 Republicans against this change in the rules. 119 Republicans voted in favor of it, but that's 74, including the Speaker, Paul Ryan, who seemed to oppose the change in the rules. And it could very well be that with the backlash we're seeing already this morning, that the Republicans could be persuaded to change their mind and keep it out of the rules package that they take up later today.
We will pick up on this after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your thoughts and questions about this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest political analyst about Congress convening today and the issues before Congress. We're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your reaction to the story of this morning, House Republicans last night voting to gut the independent Office of Congressional Ethics. They want to rename it the Office of Congressional Complaint Review. They want to put it under the oversight of the Committee on Ethics, which is a panel of lawmakers. This new office, under this new rule, would no longer be independent. It would no longer have the power to launch investigations or release reports. The full House will vote on this move when Congress convenes today. We are talking with our guest about why House Republicans decided to do this, and we wonder what you think of this action. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our lines are open, so no one cares about this. Is this not a big deal? Is there another issue before Congress that matters more to you? Let us know. We are talking with Stephen Smith, a distinguished professor of social sciences and political science. He is the director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. So, Professor Smith, you were saying just before news that you are not convinced that this is a done deal, that you think there might be enough Republicans opposing this move that it could be defeated?
Well, it could be. You know, what we're talking about is a change in the House rules that govern the ethics process for for House members. And at the beginning of each new Congress, they readopt those rules, oftentimes with changes that the majority party has put in place. And these changes in the rules governing the House Congressional Ethics Office is just one small part of that larger package. By the time they take it up later today, or even tomorrow, if they decide to delay it, Speaker Ryan could persuade enough Republicans to change their minds on this. I don't think the Republicans think that it's good public relations to come out of the chute here with this being the big news of how they started their Congress. And so I think he's going to try, as he was advising over the weekend, he's going to try to prevent this change from taking place. It's bad news in pretty much every way possible. There may be some changes in the ethics review process in the House that are a good idea, but to do it in this way, sort of in the dead of night, through a vote that's taken in a secret meeting of House Republicans, is probably not the best way to change something having to do with the ethics process in the House. So I think he's going to persuade a number of Republicans to at least reconsider this possibility. It could take the form of an amendment considered when the rules come up, and would probably receive the support of a number of Republicans if it's still backed by Speaker Ryan, and virtually all House Democrats, so that there would be a majority for an amendment to change the rule if they propose it in the form they voted on last night.
And with President-elect Trump, promising that he was going to drain the swamp, how might he react to this?
Well, he's probably going to keep his mouth shut on this one. It's hard to believe, I suppose, but I think he'll believe this is a matter for the House. And he and his advisors probably are not too pleased that this is what's getting all the coverage today. I think what they wanted the focus of the country to be on is their policy agenda, to talk about Obamacare and tax cuts and so on. And instead, all the attention is going to be on an effort by House Republicans to protect themselves from ethics investigations.
We have full lines since I prompted people. Let's go to Gene in Ashland first. Hello, Gene.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes,
morning.
What do you think?
Well, from my standpoint, you know, as a generally conservative person, probably majority of the time voting Republican, this is concerning no matter which side of the fence you're on, especially when it comes to the lack of transparency within our own government, whether at the local level or a state level, or in this case, a federal level. And it certainly seems like when you have to have a meeting in the middle of the night to pick a vote, that these sneaky things certainly have their own self-serving agenda. And that should be a concern for everyone, how blatant that is, regardless of Republican or Democrat.
Yeah. So has this, Professor Smith, a reaction to that, as a conservative who says that this isn't, this is certainly not a very, doesn't add to transparency in government?
Well, that's exactly right. The current process was set up after the Jack Abramoff scandal back in 2008 and has been in place now through four Congresses. And I think by all accounts has worked pretty well. Members of the House do not like the idea that a confidential complaint can be registered with the Office of Congressional Ethics, stimulating an investigation that's also confidential, but news of which might get leaked and do harm to a member of Congress before an investigation is complete. Moreover, they don't like the idea that this staff office can issue a report even if the Ethics Committee, which is comprised of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans, even if they choose not to pursue the matter or do not think that the evidence warrants any further action, the office can still issue a report which can do some damage to the reputation of a member of Congress. So the action here is to try to rein that in and to make sure that the ethics process is under the control of members of Congress. And after all, the Constitution gives to the House, that is to the membership, the ability to punish one of its own members. But that ability to punish members is in the hands of members, and it should not be transferred to a staff organization that's created by the rule. That's the argument in favor of this change. I think the real problem here is the process by which they're doing this is creating a political problem for the Republicans that they did not need. This could have come after a longer consideration of the alternatives with the Democrats being involved in the process. And there probably are compromise positions that are really quite reasonable. But they went pretty far quickly, and they did it quietly, entirely within the Republican Party. And I think that's going to create a major political problem for the party here at the start of this Congress.
Mary in Lancaster is with us. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I guess I agree with the other caller in regards to, that's what I was going to say, is in regards to the transparency and these late night votes where there's no accountability on who voted, and the regards to politicians anymore that feel that they can example the mayor in Green Bay, who was fined $4,000 and he still does not resign from his office. it's like they can do whatever, and there's no accountability on anything.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Mary. I know, Professor Smith, you don't know about the situation in Green Bay, which is actually a local level, not even the state level. But when Mary, I thought Mary was going to make a parallel to the state of Wisconsin, which got rid of its nonpartisan government accountability board and replaced it with a partisan, two separate partisan agencies that would have equal number of Republicans and Democrats on it looking into ethics violations and the like. Are you so Wisconsin did kind of do something similar?
Yeah, I think that the concerns here are legitimate. It is true that in the House of Representatives, the majority party, whether it's a Republican or a Democratic majority, has amended the rules at the beginning of a Congress to deal with a range of issues, many of which have pretty serious partisan implications, and the majority party has uniformly won. But when it comes to ethics, as opposed to parliamentary procedure or the structure of the committee system or the powers of the speaker on the floor, when it comes to ethics, I think the expectation is a little different. And we'd expect a full airing of the issue in a public setting with the involvement of the minority party. And that's not the way they proceeded. They took up an issue. They took up a very strong proposal. They took it up in a way that apparently even surprised the speaker, Paul Ryan, and went ahead and voted it to be a part of this rules package. I think that's a bit of an embarrassment to the speaker, and I think it's proving this morning to be an embarrassment to the party. And so I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, I'd probably bet on something being done.
Professor Smith?
Oh,
that scares me a little bit because his line seems to be fading in and out, cutting in and out just a little bit. Let me remind listeners, we are talking with Stephen Smith, a distinguished professor of social sciences and political science. He is the director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis, talking with us about the issues before Congress on this, the first day when the 115th Congress will be convening. Spent most of our time now talking about this this ethics rule, but there are certainly many more issues before Congress. Let me kind of transition into those issues, Professor Smith. Besides this ethics rule, what's the first thing this Congress is going to do?
I really don't know. The speaker usually by this time has told us what his first priority will be, and we haven't quite heard that from him yet. We've all heard about Obamacare being dumped, but the Republicans don't seem to have settled on a plan there. The House Republicans seem to be leaning toward repeal and delay, that is, repeal it as of a date sometime in the future and then plan to develop a replacement plan in the meantime. But the Trump camp still seems to favor a repeal and replace, that is, come to some agreement on a replacement. If this is their top priority, and it seemed to have been over the last couple of months, then we still seem to be some distance away from knowing how they're going to proceed. My guess is that there's some differences between the House and Senate Republicans on this, too, with the Senate Republicans being a little bit more concerned about dumping many people off of their health care insurance with no substitute in place. Tax cuts, that takes a while to make its way through Congress, and they don't have a detailed plan on hand yet. So we might see a number of smaller things coming through. Defunding Planned Parenthood, acting on some of the regulations that the Obama administration put in place in the last couple of months. Congress, through Congressional Review Act, can prevent those rules from taking place as long as they do so within 60 days. So things that have been done in the last couple of months can be reversed. So I think some of those smaller things are going to be done. And, of course, on the Senate side, the presidential nominations, the cabinet posts, are going to be receiving a lot of attention. It looks like the Democrats are going to do what they can to oppose a significant number of them. As many as 8 were listed as priorities for the Democrats yesterday. And if the Democrats force the Senate to consider each one of those proposals or the nominations at length, that'll take at least a couple of weeks to get through those nominations. And that'll create a lot of conflict between the two parties.
Yeah, so what we can't maybe might not be able to go through all 8, but what are the top cabinet picks that Democrats are going to try to delay or cause some trouble with?
Well, many Democrats don't like Tom Price. He's a member of the House and has been named the HHS, Health and Human Services Secretary, which has jurisdiction over Medicare and many other health programs, including most of the parts of Obamacare. He has not been a friend of Medicare. He's been interested in increasing the age of eligibility. He's advocated moving to more of a voucher system, even for senior citizens as a replacement for Medicare. All of that seems to violate the Trump promise not to touch Medicare. So Tom Price probably is going to be a big target. Scott Pruitt, who's named to be administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, of course, is an attorney general from Oklahoma who has filed lawsuits on behalf of the state against rules proposed by the EPA. And many Democrats think that environmental protection is popular with Americans and that Scott Pruitt doesn't represent the mainstream view on environmental matters. And Jeff Sessions, who's the senator named to be attorney general, of course, is a colleague, a longtime colleague of many senators, and so you might think that he'd have an edge. But there are many Democrats who think that his views on civil and voting rights are far, far too conservative. And his expressions from time to time related to race, which I can't quote off the top of my head, disqualify him for that position. So we're going to see them pick a few fights here, and they're going to receive a great deal of attention.
Yeah. What about the nominee for Secretary of State, Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson, who has close ties to Russia with all the Russian hacking stories in the news as well? How messy an issue is this going to be for Congress?
Well, I think he's among the 8. So I don't think that he has the challenge that some of the others have for having staked out very conservative positions on matters directly related to their responsibility as cabinet secretaries. But his connections to Russia and the Russia hacking complication, the interest between big oil in the United States and big oil in Russia, these are all complications that Democrats will raise in his case, too.
Yeah. Does we have just a minute before news. Does Congress do anything when it comes to Russia policy with the hacking story still very alive in the headlines?
Well, yes. I think eventually there's going to be a congressional investigation. You know, the Senate is likely to take the lead because we have a number of the Senate Republican senators who are insistent on having a serious investigation. They would prefer to have a special committee so that it's not under the jurisdiction of a committee that has other business to conduct and may not have a very independent point of view on the matter. And so I think we're moving in that direction. The House seems to be heading in the direction of keeping this under the jurisdiction of the existing Intelligence Committee. So we may have multiple investigations, but my guess is that the Senate investigation is the one we'll pay most attention to over the course of the next few months.
We'll check news, and then we'll continue talking about issues before Congress here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are talking with a guest political analyst about the 115th Congress, which convenes today, talking about the issues before it, including repealing and what with Obamacare, Russia policy, taxes, and more. We'll talk a little bit about budget, and we are welcoming your thoughts and your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What are you looking forward to or hoping Congress does not do coming up this year? Let's go to Dan in Marshfield. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I guess I'll start off with my other concerns from the original stated question. My other concerns mostly definitely would be health care and Social Security. I think that we are kind of in a corner on the health care issue with this House and Senate. But there's a few things that we could focus on that could benefit us, such as one is the interstate competition is one of the beneficial ideas if we could hold on to some of the other major values of the Affordable Care Act.
I get it, Dan. Let me ask our guest to jump in here. So repeal and delay, repeal and replace, might we be able to hold on to some of Obamacare and also pass, like, the GOP a plan to allow insurance plans to be sold across state lines?
Well, sure. I think that's right. The Republicans are very interested in coming up with something that's positive and a clear improvement over what the current policy is. But it's not clear to anyone, I think even to the Republicans, about how to get to that point. One of the first things they're going to be doing is passing a new budget resolution that will make in order a reconciliation bill. Reconciliation is a little congressional mechanism that allows them to avoid a Senate filibuster. And they'll be using that to gut Obamacare, I'm quite sure. But they can use it to gut the federal spending in Obamacare, but it's hard to use that process to do things like extending insurance company powers across state lines. That requires separate legislation. So the problem for the Republicans is how to do something that's coherent. They can gut Obamacare fairly easily, but replacing it requires separate legislation that could be subject to a Senate filibuster, and that means acquiring the votes of at least some Democrats. So they're a long way from figuring out how this is going to work. And I think the appeal to the House Republicans of getting rid of Obamacare and then delaying action is to try to put some pressure on Democrats to join in an effort to come up with an alternative plan once Obamacare's death is made more certain. That's a big political bet. I don't think it's a very safe one for them, because I think by the time they'd actually come up with face that deadline, they might find that the public is not too happy with the fact that many people in the public are going to lose their health care coverage without with this impending deadline, and that's going to make the Republicans somewhat unpopular. So it's really all up in the air at this moment, with some disagreements among Republicans on Capitol Hill and between members of Congress and the Trump team.
Yeah. Our caller was concerned about Social Security. What about, is this Congress going to do something to tinker with Social Security or, for that matter, Medicare?
You know, those, of course, are the two largest federal programs, and Republicans have for a very long time harped about the need to do something about these very large entitlement programs. There's nothing in the short run that requires any congressional action on Social Security. It's in pretty good financial shape for the time being. But Republicans may be thinking that with a president in the White House and a sizable majority in the House, true, not a big one in the Senate, that they better take advantage of this opportunity to address those large entitlement programs in the fashion that they find desirable. I think there will be serious disagreements among Republicans about taking on Social Security, even though surely some Republicans will want to do so. My bet is that there'll be no serious action on Social Security or Medicare. While the Republicans are focusing on Obamacare, tax cuts, and many, many other items on their agenda.
Yeah. So I understand we may hear that old phrase, fiscal cliff, return in 2017. March 16th is the deadline to raise the debt ceiling, though the Treasury Department could resort to extraordinary measures to buy more time. This would be the first debt ceiling vote since the deal that then House Speaker John Boehner and President Obama brokered in 2015. What are you expecting here?
Well, I expect that it won't be as big an issue as it has been during the Obama years. I think the president will put pressure on Republicans to extend the limit. He will not want to deal with a crisis if the limit is not extended in a timely way. And that'll put, I think, sufficient numbers of Republicans favor, along with most Democrats who I think would support an extension. Democrats will not be pursuing a hostage-taking strategy on the debt limit increase the way the Republicans have in the past few years.
You know, the government is also funded only through April 28th, so lawmakers will either need to pass a funding bill or risk a government shutdown. What sort of spending deal, what would that look like under a Trump administration?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that they will not want to make this year's budget a big issue, and that they will focus on the budget for the next fiscal year, which begins on October 1. There are just too many other big fish in the sea at this time for them to make much of an issue about spending during the rest of this fiscal year. So I have a feeling that this is going to be handled in as quick and as painless a way as possible by the Republicans. There will be a few Republicans, as there have been in the past, who say that you have to use every opportunity to squeeze federal programs and to make other important policy changes. And since this is kind of a must-pass kind of legislation, they want to exploit that to their own advantage. But I think the Republican leaders and the president will say, no, we've got bigger battles this year, and let's just muddle through this fiscal year with something of a continuing resolution and not pick these fights on this particular bill.
Yeah. Do you think Congress is going to take Trump's $1 trillion infrastructure spending proposal seriously?
No. Well, until there's a proposal, I don't see how they can take it seriously, Joy. That's a big number. What Republicans seem to be interested in is in some kind of a privatization of the infrastructure programs, in which private interests can invest in programs expecting to make a profit. And, of course, the only thing you can do with that kind of a program is invest in things like toll roads or toll bridges, in which there's some return for the investment. A $1 trillion program is probably four or five times the size of what you could do with private investment alone. And I don't see where they're going to get that money, especially if they cut on projected revenues through big tax cuts. So I think we're a long, long way from any meaningful deal on big-time infrastructure. Trump seems to have a great deal more interest in that than do congressional Republicans.
Yeah. I'm going to take one last call from David in Toma. Hi, David.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, David. We're almost out of time.
Thanks for taking my call. Professor Smith, I'm wondering whether this change, proposed change in ethics accountability is part of a larger problem of politicians becoming increasingly willing to change the rules and go to extreme measures to have their way. And related to that, I'm wondering whether Obama's trying to, in a one-sided way, be so civil that he's losing many of the battles trying to keep the moral high ground.
Well, I think the criticism of Obama really is a question of whether or not this Russian hacking intelligence that he apparently had over the course of the summer was kept under his hat for far too long. Democrats, I think, are going to be debating that for a long time. With respect to ethics, I do think it is a question of congressional Republicans trying to protect themselves from independent investigations. Now, let's keep in mind that this office could only give reports to the committee, and no punishment could be made without the approval of the committee. So this was more of an indictment or forwarding a charge to the committee. It's just that that agency now that it could forward charges after preliminary investigation can be told to discontinue investigations and will not be authorized to issue reports on its own, gutting its independence. And I think this is a pretty serious problem, a public relations problem for the Republicans today, one of which I think they're going to try to find their way around.
Yeah, we have just a minute to go. President-elect Trump said yesterday that he knows some stuff about hacking and that he's going to have some revelations that he'll reveal either today or tomorrow. He still continues to doubt that the Russians hacked to interfere in the election. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't have any idea what to make of that. It's hard to believe that he has meaningful intelligence independent of what he's receiving or could receive if he chose to listen to it from U.S. Intelligence agencies. If he does have independent information from the agencies, then his credibility certainly is going to be called into question. And I see nothing but a major distraction from the start of a new Congress coming from this. I don't understand why he would want to come out with a major announcement on such an issue on a day like today.
Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Stephen Smith is a distinguished professor of social sciences and political science. He's also the director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. Thank you to Bill Martins and to Chris Molina for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. On Your Money is coming up next. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.